I present the Prophet of the Almighty Baller.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, 1 second, I'm trying to tweet at a robot. Lux is trying to tweet.
Give me a bold flavor experience.
Nope. Done. Got your tweets done? This is, I think the second episode where you've had pre-recording tweet obligations.
Look, it's not my fault that people invent cool robots on the internet and I want to play with them. That's sort of like their fault for making such cool toys for me.
It sounded like some type of Dorito robot or something. But hey, speaking of Doritos, you're listening to Almighty Ball on the Almighty Podcast. I'm here today with special guest, our best guest so far, Mason Ginsberg of New Orleans and the New Orleans Pelicans. And Mason, where all of you contributed?
First of all, I guess that's a pretty high bar, but I've been writing for Bourbon Street Shots, the ESPN True Hoop Network site for the Pelicans, for a few years now. Got my start, this has never been my full-time thing. It's just been a fun side hobby. Got my start kind of after undergrad. I finished at Tulane in 2010. A buddy and I started a blog just writing about the Saints and Hornets at the time, and jumped to the Hive at the time on SB Nation for the Hornets. Yeah. Wrote for them for about, I don't know, under a year, and then I kind of jumped over to Hornets 24/7 of the True Hoop Network, and I've been writing for them ever since. It's been fun. We got a big good group of guys, because none of us do this full time, so we all have our own respective day jobs. So when one guy gets busy, the rest picks up the slack. And though this season hasn't exactly been the easiest one to write about.
Yeah, actually, that system of when one guy can't do it, another one just picks up the slack, that sounds a lot like the Pelicans roster itself, when like one person mm-hmm. suffers a debilitating injury, they just call another one. I'm pretty sure it's the same type thing, too, where Omer Asik is actually moonlighting as a shoe salesman at a Payless or something like that, so...
He's watching his giant inflexible fingers. Imagining them trying to tie the shoe of like a 4-year-old child is a very entertaining visual. And then he'll yell at them with his accent.
Yeah. The other day I was looking, and by the other day I mean like a month, I Google searched Omer Asik no hands, because I thought for sure there would be a picture where someone photoshopped out Omer Asik's hands, but that didn't exist. And I had a similar experience.
Well, there you go.
I had a similar experience with man, I can't remember the name of it. I think it was American Hustle, where, that meme, the Jimmy's rustling?
Mm.
Yes. Do you know what I'm referencing right now?
I don't, but it'd be easy to look up.
You're not rustling my Jimmy's.
Okay, well, don't worry about it. I thought there would be an American Rustle thing with the gorilla, but that didn't exist on the internet. But hey...
It's good. Listeners like when we explain memes on the podcast.
Yeah. We have a, really diverse talent group here. And speaking of talented and credible, Oliver, what's going on?
Oh, man. Why do I always get the credible name? Is this just because of that article? It's killing me, man.
Oliver, no. The consummate professional.
How's it going, guys? Yeah.
That's your running nickname into perpetuity, because I really like it, the consummate professional.
I'm pretty sure.
Oliver, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I am sitting in the Moda Center parking lot waiting in my headphones and my laptop on my lap right now, just kind of looking really, really funny. I don't know if I look like a creeper or if I look like just somebody talking in my car, but it is very strange.
You know, I'm sure, you know, there's probably not anyone watching you, right? Like, you're probably just hanging out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a parking lot, so it should get busier as the night goes on because the Blazers start in about 2.5 hours, so.
Oh, wow, you went really early.
I mean, I try and get there as early as I can because of shoot around and stuff, so. Yep.
You're making me feel kind of bad because I was so late to show up to recording today. this was a record. Mason, just so you know, we run a really tight ship here at Almighty Ballin.
It seems like it.
Regardless of what this intro and my lateness might suggest, and this is a record for latest time actually recording when I said that I would record. 45 minutes is pretty bad. So, you know, like the Pelicans, we have to overcome adversity, keep going on, even when it's not easy. And hey, Lux, what's going on?
Hey, I'm here. It's me, Lux, as usual. I just tweeted at the stat bot, waiting to get my stats back. That's about it.
Well, you...
It's been an eventful day. Oh, wait. There is something, but I'll plug it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, this intro has gone on long enough that you don't... Sorry.
Yeah, I'll do my plugs at the end.
Tough. So, hey, Mason, I don't think I mentioned this to you yet, but at the beginning of the season, me and Lux, or Lux and I, have... we totally disagreed on a handful of teams, and one of the teams that we disagreed on was I was convinced that the Pelicans were going to be terrible, and he thought that they were going to be good. And in a total about-face that is not like me, I'm normally very confident in my positions, I listened to your preseason
oh, no.
preview with Nate Duncan.
Oh, boy.
You know what I'm talking about, right? I listened to your preseason thing. So you actually were the straw that broke my back. And then I was like, you know what? I'm convinced by this Mason Ginsberg fellow. And I didn't even realize it was you until I talked to you on Twitter and looked you up. And then I was like, wait, I remember this. I remember him talking about po' boys with... with Nate Duncan.
Nate and I are both Tulane grads, so that was the first time I ever recorded a podcast with him. But you know, we'll chat from time to time. He's very smart, really good guy. I would listen to him on the Pelicans over me. Number one, because I'm sometimes too close to the situation. I maybe see more of the good than the bad. And you know, also he watches a ton of basketball. He can be more level headed than me, I'd say. But you know, that being said, yeah, I mean, I was higher on the team than Nate was, obviously, but I think Nate still, I mean, most people had this team pegged as another year of a low seed playoff team, but obviously plenty of things went wrong.
Well, yeah, speaking of things going wrong, I was reading just today about a local sort of voodoo practitioners offering their services to the Pelicans. Have you heard at all about this consensus among local voodoo folks in New Orleans that the team is literally cursed?
No.
Oh, man. Yeah, a person named, I think Cinnamon Black and someone else were interviewed, and it said that the team is cursed and have volunteered their services. And they come, they come qualified, too. Cinnamon Black, I believe, again, don't quote me on the name, but I believe that's the name. And they evidently did a ritual for Drew Brees before 2011 so he could not suffer from the Madden curse, and he had a pretty good season.
That's a better track record than the Pelicans training staff, which is something that we have talked about more than once. Actually, on our last podcast, we were talking about teams that are in playoff contention status and the biggest thing that are holding them back. And I brought it up in reference to Tyronn Lue and his, you know, lackluster coaching being the thing that is sort of holding the Cavs back from, you know, breaking through their ceiling. And the Pelicans training staff, I'm not sure if you would agree with me, which is why I'm asking you if you would agree with me, that the number one problem with the New Orleans Pelicans is that their training staff is just bung. You know what's an ownership you should trust?
OwningFanEssentials.net.
Ownership of the corporation / business / your friendly neighborhood, FanEssentials.net.
/ our sponsor.
/ our sponsor.
/ the gift that your girlfriend is getting you, from what I hear.
Well, yeah, my girlfriend did text me and say, I have the greatest gift for you. And if that's truly the case, then she got me a fan box from FanEssentials.net. Armand, do you know what FanEssentials.net is?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty sick company. I love it.
Armand, I've never met you in person, but what size shirt do you wear? You sound like a large. a medium or large.
I wear a large.
Yeah, yeah. But you're like a medium-sized guy who wears a large shirt.
Yeah,
right?
Large.
And hey, you're a Bucks fan slash Raptors fan, right?
Yep, I'm a bit of both.
Yeah, and you know what? You're up in Toronto, you're up in Canada, but here's the great thing about FanEssentials.net. They don't care. They'll go over the border. They don't give a shit. They'll send you a box right to your doorstep in Toronto. It'll show up in this really cool packaging that sort of has that sleek cardboard material, sort of like what iPhones come in. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that nice sort of like smooth cardboard.
Right, right, yeah.
Non-cord.
It'll show up. It has...
like they really care, yeah.
Because they do care about their product.
Yeah, they put in that extra effort.
Yeah, and that's why it's such a stupendous product, because every box is handpicked by them. It's all team-sponsored gear. Sometimes it's from third-party makers who just got the licensing. Sometimes it's from the team themselves. But every time, you love it because it's great quality gear for only $14.99 or $34.99.
It gets delivered to your door or your friend's door. Or your parents' door.
Or your stepdad's father's door.
But it gets delivered monthly as long as you keep paying the subscription. And here's some great news that the first month of that subscription is 3% off with the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout. And you know how to spell ALMIGHTY because you're looking at the name of this podcast right now.
That's great news. You're right.
But if you cannot smell even the smallest of words,
ALMIGHTY.
So thanks for using promo code ALMIGHTY. And thanks for listening through this promo, even though it was pretty good and I'm sure you weren't all that bored. So now we can get back to the topic at hand, which is the Cleveland Cavaliers, or whatever it is we're talking about, if I end up copying and pasting this promo and using another stuff with the cool music behind it. So, all right, guys.
I don't know how to answer that because I don't know. I mean, it's really hard. I don't consider myself in any way knowledgeable about anything from a medical perspective. I think it's obviously a bad trend. You can point to some questionable activity, but I mean,
well, there's
these guys are medical professionals, and I feel it's not my place to say one way or the other if they're, you know, every time something happens with an injury for the Pelicans, the first thing I do is I go tweet at Jeff Stotts, who runs one of the medical blogs for RotoWire, and he usually enlightens me, and he usually helps people kind of back off the cliff in terms of saying, you know, the Pelicans medical staff is a total joke, they don't know what they're doing. That being said, obviously, with so many bad things happening, you know, not just this season, but just recent history, this team just habitually has not been able to stay healthy. Apart from, I mean, even last year, you had Drew Holiday out for a little while. Like, the only year I can think of in the last, like, you know, at least half dozen or more that they were seemed totally healthy was the year that they took the Spurs to 7 games in the Western Conference semis with Chris Paul, and Paige just somehow miraculously stayed healthy all year before breaking down the following season. So, I mean, yeah, it's been a recurring theme. It's transcended one med staff. You know, it's just been it really, I think the voodoo doctor is really the only solution at this point.
Can you pull up that article that you were citing earlier?
I mean, do you want to pull those exact numbers?
Yeah, but before you say that, when Lux and I were talking about this on the way over here, the way that I sort of explained where I was coming from is all we can do is speculate as to the actual talent of, say, a three-point shooter, right? But if after you take 100 shots, right, you make 10% of them, it's not fair to, or it's maybe a fair assumption to assume, okay, probably there wasn't just that random off night or that sort of butterfly wings, like, worth of missing a shot so that 30% didn't go in. It's better to assume that, you know, he's somewhere near a 10% shooter as opposed to somewhere near a 40% shooter, and he just got really, really unlucky. And just the big pile of evidence suggesting that the training staff is incompetent just seems to me to be, it's like, yeah, it could be random, you know, like it could be just a, you know, really, really cold streak to run with my, you know, not awesome metaphor. But it seems more likely to me, especially considering the circumstances around it and the fact that they're the Saints training staff too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, so it seems to me like, yes, it's speculating, but it's sports. We're supposed to speculate wildly.
So one thing, in that self-same car ride on the way here, I was trying to make the argument that maybe it was random. So I put up this article that I was misquoting, and actually was pretty compelling evidence the other way. And I'm wondering, Mason, if you're aware of or like what you have to say about sort of these statistics. So, in 3 years in LA, Eric Gordon played 80% of his team's games. In New Orleans, he's played 43%. Giroux was 95% in Philly and has been 59% in New Orleans.
Well, we know what happened with Giroux now. We know what that hinky withheld some...
but wouldn't that be more evidence towards the Pelicans training staff not being good? Because they didn't catch it.
But if you're going to fine Hinkie $3 million, there's something else going on there. You know, it's not just Pelicans missed something.
I agree.
In the same vein, Tyreek played 80 with the Kings, 71 in New Orleans, and Anderson was 70 in New Orleans and 79 before with the Magic and the Sixers. That, to me, seems like the most compelling evidence against the training staff. It's a little hard to know. Like you were saying before, I'm not a trained medical professional, so it's hard to say for sure. Yeah. But I do.
So I will give you. Yeah, I will give you
those numbers. Distressing.
Yeah. So the Tyreek thing is suspicious because he's had now like 3 surgeries on his knee over the past year. That'll give you. That is. I don't know what to make of that, but it doesn't look good. Going one by one. First, with Eric Gordon, there was mounting evidence, and again, you can put this partially on the training staff too, I guess. But he didn't want to be in New Orleans. I don't think he took his rehab particularly seriously at the start, and that caused problems.
See, that's what I was saying. Yeah. That's the seriousness of the rehab and the rehabilitation process, I think, is a bigger key than the medical stuff. I think we were talking about this, I don't know how long ago, but I think that may be a bigger key in this than the other side of things.
I think it was on the Steph Curry podcast. We were talking about Steph Curry. Yeah.
And with Ryan Anderson, there was a freak that the collision with Gerald Wallace was a freak injury, and it caused him to miss some major time. And so, and right now, I mean, who knows what the Pelicans are doing right now with their guys? Just because the season's over, people are just kind of taking it easy. I don't really know what's going on with Anderson, right? Or, you know, how valid whatever he has right now is. But yeah, I just think, in his particular case, that brutal collision with Gerald Wallace just. It really knocked him out for a while, and it was nothing you could do to prevent something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess my point earlier that I didn't really elucidate super well is that all of this stuff is circumstantial, but to the extent that we're able to say, you know what, the Phoenix Suns have a really good training staff because look at all this line of success, it seems like it would be rational to also assume, okay, the Pelicans have a really bad training staff because they have this slew of failures. You know, and pegging it on them, like you said, in a lot of cases, there are circumstantial things floating around it, and I think that's fair enough. I just think that...
Well, I guess the interesting question that raises is if you assume that this is either random or sort of a player-specific set of circumstances, what do the Pelicans do moving forward to make this jump from, like, top of the bottom to bottom of the top sort of move? If there's not a clearly isolatable thing, like, what does the future look like for this team then?
Yeah, we can back off of the training staff, but yeah, Mason. So
I can't tell you if you're right or you're wrong. Honestly, like, the Pelicans training staff may be one of the worst in the league. I don't know. When it comes to medical topics, I just get scared to comment. Like, even look at Phoenix, who's notoriously been the best in the league for years, and everyone thought, oh, Tyson Chandler going to Phoenix, that just makes so much sense. And, you know, he's had his problems there in Phoenix too. So, like, I mean, obviously that's an aberration, that's not the norm, but it's just really hard to comment about these types of things one way or the other.
Yeah, sure. So bearing all that in mind, how do you think this team projects going forward? Like, what do you think the needs or the direction of the franchise is now with all these injuries and with all these players sort of with these recurring freak injuries and all that sort of business?
Yeah, I guess starting with who's salvageable.
That's such a depressing way to put it, but I can't blame you for it.
Yeah, what was that? What was the way that article phrased that? Lux was reading this article that was like, we, during the offseason, we need to rebuild the way.
Oh, it was so creepy. Sorry to get off topic, but this is a very distressing quote. The article refers to team officials considering redeveloping Anthony Davis's body as though he's, like, literally...
We have the technology!
Oh,
We can rebuild him.
But aside from redeveloping and creating the new 2.0 part robot Anthony Davis,
salvageable.
What is salvageable and reconstructible about this team going forward?
And I promise I won't interrupt you again.
So, I mean, first of all, the guys you have coming off the books are Anderson, Gordon, and thank God, Norris Cole.
Norris Cole!
Two-time NBA champion, up, Norris Cole.
So, you've
got AD.
First Ish Smith and now this.
You've got AD, who everyone, or the Pelicans have said, will be ready for training camp in October. Then you've got Tyreek, who, man, I was all in on, obviously, if you heard the Nate Duncan podcast of me sound like an idiot gushing about Tyreek Evans. Nate was on board with me, to be fair, talking about how Tyreek had the most to benefit from Gentry's new offense. But
hey, that's what I said on our podcast too, and I also sounded like
I was excited to see what Darren Erman could do with him defensively, because Tyreek's never had a good coach in his career. He really hasn't. And he's got the athleticism and the wingspan to theoretically be a good defender. And so I was like, wow, between Gentry's up-tempo offense and Darren Erman coming in and hopefully at least improving the defense, maybe not necessarily quick fixing it, but I thought Tyreek had a lot of room to grow, and that just didn't happen. But anyway, so Tyreek's hurt, hopefully healthy for opening day. I thought around the deadline before his injury came out and he was out for the season, I thought he'd be a very interesting trade piece this summer because – there aren't a ton. Well, the point guard is obviously a deep position in the NBA. It's not a deep position this free agency class, and I thought that he may have some real value to a team. Not huge, but real enough. And I still think that there may be a chance that Tyreek Evans is dealt this offseason, just because he and Gentry just clearly don't really fit together. Why do you think that is? Tyreek's just, he's a ball dominant player, and Gentry's offense is predicated around movement, and it's just, and so by comparison, Tyreek under Monty Williams, it really worked because there's a little more isolation, and the way that the Pelicans play was a slow half court offense, and if Tyreek drove, even if he missed, they had guys like Anderson, Davis, and Omer crashing. All three are plus offensive rebounders, and so it actually worked decently well. And that's just not the system that the Pelicans have in place this year.
Opportunity so for James Harden assists or Kobe assists, whatever.
Absolutely. Kurt Goldsberry wrote about that last year, and it's so true with Tyreek. Tyreek and AD are the perfect pair for that, depending on the style of offense you want to play. But
yeah.
So I mean, I think the guys you would definitely see as kind of a core next year, but Drew and AD are the givens. I would love to see them try to extend Drew this summer and just kind of forego the cap space because I just don't see any huge home runs that the Pelicans can realistically attain with their space. But
what,
I don't think
– what about a guy?
Drew's not going to go for that.
Oh, go ahead.
I just don't see it. I think Drew's going to be an expiring contract next season, and I think he knows how much money he can make in the free agent market the year following. And while I think the Pelicans will look to bring him back, I think Drew realizes how much that taking extending this summer is not going to be nearly as lucrative for him as waiting. So, I think the Pelicans –
Whoa.
Go ahead.
I mean, he could arguably be injury prone. Wouldn't that factor into his decision making?
I just don't see it. I just don't think players are wired like that. And Drew's played fantastically this year. He's clearly been the Pelicans' second best player.
Drew's great.
Yeah.
I
don't think he'll listen to the Pelicans if they want to extend him the summer. So you've got Drew, you've got AD, you hopefully have Quincy Pondexter coming back. I wrote something a couple months back before he was ruled out for the year talking about how much he means to the
just
Pelicans.
So you know,
obviously, he's not by any means a great player.
That
but,
was the specific argument that got me. Is I heard your argument for, okay, but you, Nate Duncan, right? I'm talking about back when you did the preseason thing.
Yep.
This Quincy Pondexter guy, when he comes back, he's going to be such a vital piece off of the bench so that they can do some of the things that Alvin Gentry sort of instinctively wants to do with an offense. And I was like, you know what? I see that. Quincy Pondexter definitely has the body and skill set potential to be a great stretch for. But please continue.
He's a three. Quincy's a three through and through, I think. Cunningham's more of your small ball four kind of guy.
You lied to me, Mason.
But
or maybe you didn't. Maybe I am misremembering. But I thought you said that Quincy was a good Smallville 4 candidate.
Nah, I mean, I touted that about Dante because he was working on the three-point shot before the season, and I really thought if Dante can extend his range, because Dante shot like 50% on long twos last year, and so I was like, you know, if he can make 34-35% from three-point range, if he takes a step back,
yeah,
that really opens things up for an Alvin Gentry offense. Yeah. He's much better suited to play the four than the three, especially defensively. So, yeah, and you know, Dante's credit, he's shot okay from three-point range. He shot more of them.
Like 32-33, right?
Yeah,
I mean, but that's, I mean, he's playing 40 minutes a night now, which I think is your bigger problem.
Yeah, that is.
He's basically your star.
He's the most consistent. Yeah, he's probably like, someone said something to me on, someone tweeted me the other day about just after the Pelicans released the injury report for Drew and Alonzo G, and I tweeted out just by descending minutes, the players that are left, and Dante was up the top, and there's like, you know, someone asked where he's hiding every game, you know, so he can avoid injuries as much as possible. but you know, back to, you know, Quincy, he's the closest thing the Pelicans have to a 3-and-D guy. I mean, they've got guys that can shoot or guys who can play defense right now. And Quincy, you got to guard him from three-point range, and he was a very solid defender for the Pelicans last season. And he, without him, that midseason trade where they traded Austin Rivers and Russ Smith for Quincy, which was just highway robbery in my opinion, especially considering the fact that Quincy is owed just about $3.5 million a year for the next two seasons as well.
Why would you that was highway robbery? Why would you give up Austin Rivers? Come on.
It's especially funny given the total lack of depth on the wing for the Clippers. It's like you'd think they'd have hoarded those pieces. Like,
they get rid of all their wings.
Yeah. Classic Spanish doubloons.
Classic, yeah. Rock Divers.
Rock Divers, yeah. I mean, so yeah, that was a three-teamer with Quincy. I got Quincy back from Memphis, but But yeah, I mean, it was he was a great piece, and the Pelicans don't make the playoffs without him, like point blank.
They don't make the playoffs without him. You're right.
I meant last year, but yeah.
But also this year they don't make the playoffs without him.
That's also a fact. I cannot argue that.
A couple players.
We'll see about his knee.
Yeah, a couple of players that I had some questions about, more or less future term wise. Luke Babbitt, Cunningham, obviously, and then Tim Frazier. Do you know anything of the sort between those three guys? If you think they'll keep them, and Luke Babbitt, as of late, seems to be playing a little bit better. I don't know how formidable he is in the NBA anymore, but he seems to be playing better.
Does he still have that bowl cut?
Yeah, he definitely does. I believe pretty close to it.
Yeah, I mean, Luke may be a guy that the Pelicans look to keep, especially if Anderson walks, which I think the odds are more likely than not that he does, that Anderson does leave. But and if he does, the Pelicans have only $200,000 is guaranteed of Luke's contract for next season. So they don't have to keep him. But I think, you know, for 1.2, I think especially, again, if you lose Anderson, it's worth having a guy like Luke Babbitt up as a guy on your bench just in case.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I like him. Cunningham, well, he's under contract. He signed a 3-year, $9 million deal before the season.
Yep.
I like him. I liked him a lot last year. I like him a lot more at the four than the three.
Yeah.
He hasn't done quite – he's not one of those guys where you look at the stats, you're like, this guy's terrible. But he's really not. He's a hustler. He plays two ways. Like, he's always he's very
– Yep.
He's a tough defender. He's not always the best defender. But, when, like I said, when he's playing the four, I think
– A lot of this language, though, is like – I'm not saying that it is in this specific case, but a lot of that language is like sneak dissy. It's like, well you know, he hustles and he plays good defense and he might not be the most skilled, but it's got that undertone to it.
It's the Pelicans, it's the roster. It's what you're left with at this point in the season, man.
He's been a decent player.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I like Dante Cunningham too, but I think that your rhetoric there does speak to the fact that he's so limited. He definitely has a role to play, but he's never going to be more than that role.
That's exactly what he is. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a small ball four off your bench. That's what Dante Cunningham is, and that's what.
But he's been there all his career. I'm just curious. That's what his salary future wise, you know, I mean, do you see him in the future? Obviously, he's a 3-year contract. I'm just curious if you think they may part ways with him in a deal or something like that. I mean, obviously you can't see the future, but I'm just curious what the thoughts were around him. And then Tim Frazier was the other guy, just because he just got signed. And obviously,
Portland,
as coming from Portland, Dame really liked him. And he was a hard worker. I didn't see too much from him in Portland. Everybody really, really loved him here, but, you know, obviously playing-wise, I don't think he was the greatest of options as a backup point guard for Portland.
Yeah, I haven't watched him play much because I haven't been able to watch a ton of games recently, but I mean, he's played well for the Pelicans. He's been aggressive. He's been a decent scoring option. He's fallen into, just looking at the numbers, he's fallen into the in love with the mid-range game a little too much for my taste. But you know, he can pass it all right. He can get, you know, he can be aggressive and really score. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, playing the mid-range for point guards and being from Dallas, I talk about this every once in a while. The mid-range game, especially the long two game, when it's from a very specific place at the top of the key, has really, really unique implications as far as stretching the floor. And you can see that with Dirk, but also just like a minor example of a low percentage shooting point guard. Trey Burke up in Utah has had a bit of a resurgence year because he stopped trying to make it to the basket because he whiffs layups all the time. And he started sort of playing that mid-range game. And although, yeah, like mid-range jump shots are not the best thing, that specific type of mid-range jump shot to me seems like it has a really interesting way of stretching the floor. But unfortunately, I think Anthony Davis already like fulfills that. That's sort of where he stomps around sometimes when they're running horns and stuff.
Yeah, and I can see that. And that's, while not a point guard, that's kind of where Jason Smith loved to live for the Hornets when he was in New Orleans, and that's where he drew a lot of his value from. I do hear you there. But you know, especially it's going to be...
It opens up those really interesting lanes on... It opens up one lane on either side, right? Depending on where you're screening. And then it opens up the right and left side near the baseline for drives. And that's interesting spacing-wise, what it forces when you know that someone can hit that shot. However, that being said...
Yeah, Westbrook has a good job of that.
Right, exactly.
But then he also is able to get players close and then...
Yeah.
Turn them into ashes and then yam on their urns.
Well, but what I was saying with like one of the sides being opened up is that depending on where you're setting a screen, one side or the other is going to be opened up. And when you have a player like Russell Westbrook, they're both opened up because Russell Westbrook can hit the other side. But all this being said, I was more just trying to show I don't think that Tim Frazier is going to be able to fill that role. So like it's a moot point.
No, probably not.
Right. So